At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This podcast is brought to you by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAY2WIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we're talking about Outlaws of Thunder Junction. Is that what it is? That sounds made up.
It is made up, as a matter of fact.
Somebody made that up.
Someone, in fact, did make that up.
Outlaws of Thunder Junction.
Thunder Junction, yeah.
This week, we're talking about Outlaws of Thunder Junction and all of its set equivalents, or specifically the best cards in CDH from Outlaws of Thunder Junction.
But before we do, make sure you check us out on Patreon to help support us directly and get awesome extra perks, too.
I'm excited. This set is pushed a little.
It's loaded with cards that could see play in CEDH. We have 27 of them to get through today, actually.
Now, not all of these cards are going to see play in CEDH. Most of them are considerations for some decks, but a couple of them are going to see play in a ton of decks, and I'm excited to talk about all of them. We're rating them, right? 1 to 5?
We're going to rate them 1 to 5, yeah. So if we give a card a 5, that means that we think it's going to see play in most CEDH decks. Is that where we've landed on fives being?
I think a 5 is basically a staple across the board. Unless there's some specific reason not to, most decks will play a 5.
If you're in that color, you are playing this card. Now, there are going to be a couple of, like, maybe some small examples of decks that might not actually want it because it might not actually fit its theme. But if it's going to be ubiquitous enough that we can consider it a staple, it can still be a 5.
Fours are going to be seen play in most decks. The top decks are going to see play in a decent amount, but it's not in every single deck. You kind of have to be going towards one specific strategy. But fours are still very powerful CDH cards.
Things that we'll see play in many decks of that color, but not necessarily the majority of them.
Yeah, threes are kind of, they'll see in a deck or two.
A deck or two.
They're not hyper-specific to one commander, but they're not the best cards over. Lightning Bolt is normally like a 3.5, you know what I mean? Just something like that. They see played in some decks, two-color decks, one-color decks. It could be helpful, but not the best card in the world.
Twos are going to be cards that people will think could be used in a CEDH scenario, but the reality is it won't have long-term applications in the format.
Yeah, I also could put two, like if it sees playing one specific deck and only that one deck because it works with the commander. To me, that's normally a 2-ish.
We'll probably like give it a decimal point after the 2 in those cases, but normally 2 is going to be around there. Cards that people are thinking about that may or may not actually make it somewhere.
Ones are shit.
Ones are absolutely terrible cards that you shouldn't play.
Normally ones would be pissed, but in our situation, ones are shit.
Why are normally ones pissed?
Well, because if you take a number 1, that's P, and if you take a number 2, that's P.
Oh, well... Yeah, no, that's straight up true. Normally, one is our P.
So, all right, in this situation, ones are pissed. They're not CDH cards. For the most part, we don't think they're going to be good.
Yeah, exactly.
And then zeros, there's no zeros because it's 1 to 5, not
unless
0 to 5.
Unless we really hate it. If we really hate it,
we'll
give it a 0.
Wheel of Misfortune is a 0.
That card's a fucking 0.
All right, let's get into it.
Let's take it away with the final showdown.
How did I know you were going to do that?
Did you really?
Yeah,
that's
of course.
So embarrassing. I'm so predictable. Oh, my God.
If Cam can sing it, he'll sing it.
All right, so this is 1 white mana for an instant with spree. That means kicker. So we can choose any of these other abilities that it has and pay additional mana to get that ability. So for an additional generic mana, we can have all creatures lose all abilities until end of turn. For an additional generic mana, we can choose a creature that we control to have it gain indestructible until end of turn. And for 3 generic and 2 more white mana, you can destroy all creatures.
Now, I want to say a couple things. Number 1, if you cast this for 1 white mana, it does nothing.
Nothing.
No effect at all. It has nothing on it.
That's cool.
I think, now correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not sure. If I pay 2 mana for this, a white and a generic, I can either choose the first or the second mode, right?
Correct.
And if I pay 3 white, generic, generic, I can choose both of those modes, correct?
If you pay white, generic, generic, yes, because it says choose 1 or more additional costs.
Theoretically, you could choose all of them also if you wanted to.
Pay a ton of mana to give one of your creatures indestructible, have everything else lose indestructible, and then wrath the board. That's technically what this card wants to do in standard. What we want to use it for in CEDH, though, is to get around pesky stacks creatures in play so that we can win the game.
Yeah, this looks a little bit like a dress down, turning off the abilities of all creatures, but it's different from dress down in a couple notable ways. Number one, dress down is a permanent when it enters, which means creatures that come in afterwards still have no abilities.
So that will shut off Dockside Extortionist and Thassa's Oracle from doing their thing.
This one will not do that. If you throw Thassa's Oracle on the stack and you cast this and you go for mode no abilities, it's going to say, okay, yeah, all the creatures in play, no abilities. This Thassa's Oracle on the stack, I don't see that though. So when that one comes in, ability.
This Grand Abolisher that comes in after, ability.
Right, so it's not good in that same way that Dress Down is. Dress Down, you can also fire off in someone's end step, untap, and then you have a full turn where everything's shut off. This is another one where this can't do this. But where this can shine, this card that I think is particularly good, is still turning off all those stacks pieces on your turn. Then after that, you can cast your own Dockside Extortionist, which still has its abilities, make all your treasures. Cast your Atraxa. Those are separate examples, but get rid of the Dranith temporarily so you can get your Atraxa in play, and then if you need to just pass the turn, that Dranith Magistrate is still there.
I think what's really important to note is that silver bullets in CEDH are generally bad,
yeah,
because we're a singleton format, so trying to rely on finding these niche ways to deal with Dockside Extortionist, even though it's seen play in every red deck, like, that doesn't necessarily mean that we should be playing cards to shut it down. Instead, we should be playing cards that have more utility to help us win the game, like Final Showdown.
I think the main reason that is there are just so many good cards that shut down Dockside, but also do other stuff too. So you can't just look at it as, like, this shuts off Dockside, but if it doesn't do a bunch of other stuff too, you got to keep that in mind also.
Exactly.
I don't know, I like Final Fortune because it helps you win the game.
You like what card?
I like Final Showdown because it helps you win the game, the player casting it. I'm not really interested in stopping my opponents nowadays, to be honest. It's just impossible. I've been watching a lot of NBA recently, and you just can't guard some guys. The offense is just too good.
They're too big,
you
right?
Just, you can't do it. You have to let them score. There's nothing you can do but just try to make sure that you can score more points than them. That's how kind of I view CDH recently is, you're going to do what you're going to do. If I can stop you, great. But I want cards in my deck that help me win the game. And also, sometimes this is a board wipe at instant speed. Like, that's not nothing. That's going to come up.
I didn't realize that's instant speed. Yeah, but that's a 6-mana instant speed board wrath, which is a lot.
It's
but,
a
like,
lot,
if
but...
you can untap then and, like,
yeah,
if you're the first person to rebuild after that, that's so good.
Yeah, I really think Final Showdown's a real card. I'm looking...
White Cyclonic Rift.
Okay. Sure. Kind of. I mean, I'm looking forward to trying it out in Atraxa in a lot of decks. I think it's going to be, honestly, I'm going to give it like a 4. It's not going to go in every single deck for sure, but I think it's going to go in a chunk of decks.
I would give it a 3.5. We already do have Dress Down, and a lot of the decks that I'm looking for a card like this in are going to be like these Underworld Breach decks where I don't necessarily like care about
your own abilities.
And I can still utilize Dress Down to hate on Thassa's Oracles and Dockside if I need them to.
Yeah, that's fair.
Whereas I do like this in like a lot of like Mardu decks though too. Like the more non-blue decks I'm playing, the more I'd want to see something like this. I do think 3.5 is where I would put this. All right, Bovine Intervention is our next card. This is 1W for an instant that says destroy target artifact or creature. Its controller creates a 2/2 white ox creature token.
Another removal spell, similar to Rapid Hybridization, similar to the one that recently came out that makes maps.
Oh, Get Lost.
Get Lost?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Get Except Lost. That one gets rid of enchantments and this one does artifacts.
Right, that one gets rid of enchantments and planeswalkers and this one gets artifacts. Maps, I think, is a map better than a 2-2?
A map is worse than a 2-2.
A map's worse than a 2-2, but
I guess
two
it depends
maps?
On what you're trying to do. If you get lost against the Urza player, like they can use those maps to make mana, but I think most decks can use a 2-2 ox for like Gaia's Cradle, Diabolic Intent reasons, a little bit better.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't know that this is going to see a ton of play. This is in white, so it compares with things like Swords to Plowshare and Path to Exile already, but the fact that it can hit an artifact is kind of nice. Some decks might want it. I maybe give it around a 2.
What's the name of the blue card that's 1W that exiles a creature or artifact and gives them a 4/4 instead? Like, that card sees play, but that card says exile on it, so like it actually gets rid of the One Ring, whereas this doesn't.
Right, and that card is in blue, so mono blue decks can enjoy that card, whereas this card is in white, where mono white decks, I don't even know if they would sink down to this because there's so many other options.
You're already fighting for so many other things, and it's not like white has trouble dealing with artifacts anyway. I think it's a 2.
Yeah, I'm going to lock it in as a 2.
It's a solid 2. Nice. Okay. High Noon is the next card, as opposed to some other pun I didn't think about. Each player...
It's like a comedian who just says, pretend I'm saying something funny. That's the joke.
Yeah,
just
everyone laugh.
Act like it's funny. There's nothing there, though. Sorry.
I brought a laugh track to my stand-up routine.
We should start doing that. Just a manual laugh track here.
Start feeling a lot better.
Yeah.
All right, High Noon. One and a white for an enchantment. Each player can't cast more than one spell each turn, but for four and a red, you can sacrifice it to deal 5 damage to any target. Oh, that's Lava Axe.
Yeah, dude, this is an exciting card for stacks for sure. Number one, it's the cheapest full-blown Rule of Law that we've ever seen at 2 mana. We have other things like Deafening Silence and Aether Sworn Canonist.
But they all have other clauses that you let you get around it.
This is full-blown Rule of Law, which we have discovered overall not ideal, especially in these metas of today. Rule of Law hasn't been the best, but this has the one thing that we want on Rule of Laws, which you can get rid of it when you want to. 5 mana, that is an enormous amount of mana. But being able to get rid of the Rule of Law when you know that your opponents have counterspells that you want them to start using on each other, that's like necessary. So I think High Noon's a great card. Its only issue is just there's not a lot of powerful stacks decks that are looking for that right now, but its effect is so good.
It's entering the meta and it's gonna suck right now, but give this card like a year and wait for like things to change around the format a little bit, and this is gonna see play all over the place. 5 damage is nothing to sneeze at.
It's a lot of damage. That's going to kill almost everything in the format, besides weird things like Consecrated Sphinxes that by the time that's there, you're probably pretty dead anyway. I don't know.
This is like your Dauntless Dismantler kind of effect, where like you don't just want a stacks piece. You want a stacks piece that's going to double as something else when you need it to double as something
Absolutely.
Else.
Absolutely. The only thing that holds it back is the 5 mana. I kind of wish it was like 3 mana and 3 damage instead, just so as it was more manageable. Keeping a 5 mana, that's going to be like impossible for a lot
you
of stacks.
You manageable.
Man.
That was good.
Nice. I'm funny. I think I probably give it right now somewhere around like a 3. It's very close to being much higher than that. And I think if the meta was different, it'd be a little bit stronger. But
I'll give
it
a 3 too. Because this is technically a multicolor card too. It's in the white section here. But like not every stacks deck that wants this is going to be able to play it. So I think 3 is a good spot for it right now. But would not be surprised to see it climb up to like a 4 being its maximum.
If we get a new stacks commander, the next Winota that's even stronger that does something that's helpful with this.
With like enchantments specifically maybe.
Then we're really talking. But for now, it's okay. It'll be fine.
It'll be fine. Like this next card, Aven Interrupter.
Yeah, another exciting stacks
this
card.
This card says, get it? Funny. Yeah. This is 1 and 2 white for a bird rogue, 2/2, flash flyer. And when it enters the battlefield, you can exile target spell and it becomes plotted. This is our first instance of plotting.
Yeah, we have the reminder text right now.
Yes. Its owner may cast that plotted spell as a sorcery on a later turn without paying its mana cost.
A later turn. I want to emphasize that right now. If you Aven Interrupter someone's thing, they have to wait until the next turn to recast it again. That's important.
And it also says spells your opponents control cast from graveyards or from exile cost 2 more to cast.
So the plotted thing is 1. It stops that. But also Underworld Breach and Food Chain stops those things too.
Well, stops is a strong word because plotted lets you play the card without paying its mana cost. So it is just 2 more generic mana to play whatever it is you were going to play. But the important thing is that you can't do it on that turn.
And when I say stop, I'm really specifically referring to the 2 extra mana. Food Chain cannot win through that 2 extra mana cost.
Good
whether it
point.
Was plotted or not, Food Chain needs to be able to cast the thing for its current mana cost because you net 1 mana each time. And Underworld Breach is still probably doable, but it's certainly makes their Underworld Breach lines much more difficult when your Lion's Eye Diamond now costs 2 instead of 0.
But it turns your LED into a Lotus Petal instead,
right,
which is a lot scarier.
Yeah, so it's just going to make it a little bit more tricky, which like is exactly what you want in a stack deck. You just want a couple different things that are holding them back just a little bit. This is another one where like this is the Manglehorn. This is the card that I'm really looking for in stack decks now that on ETB, it's solid interaction. It stops win conditions and also it helps stop the interaction that it did also because next turn they have to pay 2 more for it. The Flying Body is also helpful for Timna. I think this card's great.
Now, when it says exile target spell, that means you can exile a creature on the stack,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah. That's just very important. Fast as Oracle.
The plotted reminder text just says you cast it as a sorcery, which is weird for a creature or like an enchantment or something that
I
you're trying to get rid of.
I think in the past that would have been worded as you may cast it as sorcery speed.
But it's weird that you cast it as a sorcery because that implies that it's not a permanent anymore.
Yeah.
And that like the High Noon that they cast again is going to go away.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case, though. I think you're casting at sorcery speed.
So reading the card
does not necessarily explain the card. Because, yeah, this kind of reads like it turns the card into a sorcery.
This is 2024 Magic the Gathering now.
Yeah. You gotta look it up on your phone. Yeah, the cards don't say what they do.
You gotta look it up on your phone. That's funny.
This one's good. I give this one a little bit higher than High Noon. I think this is going to see play in a little bit more. It's a little bit more exciting because it's on a creature body. I'm going to go like... What did I give last one? 3? I think this is like a 3.3.
I think I am undervaluating this card because what's the name of the 1 and 2 white 2/2 that exiles a creature with CMC 4 or less? And then when they kill the creature, they don't get it back.
Skyclave Apparition.
That's what it is. Skyclave Apparition. Yeah, remember? That card came out. It saw a ton of constructed play. And then, like, it saw, like, a little bit of CEDH play in, like, the slower, more, yeah, you know, creature-based Timna decks. And I think that's where this is going to see play, too. So, ultimately, I think it gets a 3. Yeah. Because any blue deck, I'm not interested in this.
That's true. It is worse than any blue counterspell, I would say.
Yeah. But in the decks that don't have access to on-the-stack interaction, which is, like, every mono-white deck. Like,
if you're looking for a way to stop Thassa's Oracle, this is going to be helpful. It's not perfect, but it's helpful.
But it buys us time.
Buys you time.
Yes. All right. Archmage's Newt is 1 and a blue for a 2/2 that says, when it deals combat damage to a player, target instant or sorcery card in your graveyard gains flashback until end of turn. The flashback cost is equal to its mana cost, and that card gains flashback 0 if Archmage's Newt was saddled.
Which, in saddle 3 you said, right?
I haven't said that yet, but it does have saddle 3, which is basically
crew.
For creatures.
Yeah, crew for creatures. So it doesn't actually turn it into a creature. It's always a creature, but instead saddling it would just give it the ability that it has.
It has, yeah, whatever exactly. Its ability, yeah, is. You're not changing the Newt's power and toughness at all.
This card looks like Snapcaster Mage, which is a card that does not see any play in CDH.
So why would this see play in CEDH?
That zero ability is kind of interesting.
Like, the upside seems real cool if you can saddle it, but, like, my other question is, like, Burgie saddles this, like, your commander has to saddle this for this to be good? Right?
I would say for requirements, your commander has to be 3 power in order for you to want to play this card, which is kind of rare. Most of the commanders that I'm thinking of off the top are like 2 powers, like Timnas and your Kinnons and your Quarks and your decks that would want something like this.
And, like, are you really trying to saddle your Crown so that you can get this ability? Like, this thing doesn't have evasion, which also makes it tough. Where I might like this more is if you're playing Bruise as, like, one of your 2 commanders, and then that way you can, like, give it double strike and, like, maybe help it a little bit more. Bruise can crew it or saddle it as well.
It does some cool things. I think it's too much setup. You know what I mean? If you entomb the Ad Nauseam into your graveyard and then you tap your Bruise to saddle this and then you get to cast Ad Nauseam for free, like, that's really good, but that's like a magical Christmas thing that's probably not going to happen enough.
And you're in Silas Bruise.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I don't know, but ceiling is high. If there's a commander that we're not thinking of, there probably is something that can use this. Nothing that's like a powerful tier one strategy right now, so I don't think it'll see a ton of play, but it's an interesting card that has a lot of upside.
Yeah,
sure.
It's a card that looks like something else that was very powerful in Magic, and I don't know, maybe Snapcaster Mage doesn't see play. Maybe that's telling.
To be honest, sometimes I think Snapcaster Mage should see play, especially in the Timna decks. You get to use the body and, like, to reuse your spells, but I don't know. It doesn't really come up much.
The good cards are free, but, yeah, like, you have to...
You can't snap them back. You can't Snapcaster back
Force of will or anything. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. This card's a 1.5. Moving on.
Double Down is the next card. This is 3 and a blue for an enchantment that says whenever you cast an outlaw spell, you copy it. Assassins, mercenaries, pirates, rogues, and warlocks are outlaws.
We don't talk about much, but I just want to say Dockside is a pirate.
Yeah, that's literally the only reason why I put this on the list, too. This is a 1.
Yeah, wait, a 1.
It's a 1.
There's, like, yeah, all the doublers are cool. Copy the spells are cool. Maybe there's a Quark list that, I don't know.
Is there a Quark list? Is, like, does Orvar want this? Probably not.
Whenever you cast copy that, those are powerful words.
Tivit's a rogue.
Is it?
Yeah.
Legendary, though. I guess you still get the treasures and
who
stuff.
Who cares? Yeah, whatever. You still get the things.
A 4-mana do-nothing enchantment is not good. I'm going to drop my 2 down to a 1.
It's a 1, yeah. Step Between Worlds is 3 and 2 blue for a sorcery that says each player may shuffle their hand and graveyard into their library. Each player who does draws 7 cards, and then you exile Step Between Worlds, and you can plot it for 4 and 2 blue. This is an optional time twister.
Right.
But what's really cool about this, to me, is plot. Now, although it's 6 mana and then you do nothing that turn, on a follow-up turn, getting to wheel for free and then having all of your 6 mana up so that you can play out your hand seems super powerful.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. We haven't seen plot yet, so it's hard to tell exactly how they'll play out. A part of me says so bad, especially in, like, 1v1, plot's got to be terrible. To waste 50% of the whole turn's game state on doing nothing just to maybe do something, like, that feels really bad. But in Commander, if you can, like... I don't know, like, I can get 6 mana on turn 2 with Atraxa pretty easily. If you can on turn 2, skip your turn 2 because you know you're at a greedy pod where, like, no one's really going to win on turn 2. I guess greedy's the wrong word, the opposite of greedy. Skip your turn 2 to do this, and then turn 3, wheel for free and, like, storm off. Like, Maybe, but it's hard to envision that. We haven't really seen something like this, so it's hard to really tell. I kind of feel like it's bad. I feel like wasting your turn to do nothing. What if you don't even get your next turn? What if you die?
Oh, it's a 1.5.
Yeah,
because
okay.
it also doesn't disrupt your opponents.
At all, yeah.
Yeah, it's got that stupid, like, Wheel of Misfortune thing, except they don't even, like, take damage or something. Yeah,
what I do know that will happen with this card is that if you cross off the title and write Time Twister and then cross out the May abilities, you can use this as a proxy Time Twister.
And you cross off plot?
And
yeah,
cross
100%.
Off plot.
Yeah.
Do all those
this
things.
This is your proxy Time
That's
Twister.
That's the best thing that this will
We're
be.
We're going to host a CEDH tournament and give away a Time Twister and give away this card.
It was Sharpied on
this
it.
This is Sharpied, yeah. There we go. All right, so let's move into black then. We have a lot of black cards to talk about, and the first one is Forsaken Miner. This is a black mana for a 2/2 Skeleton Rogue. It can't block, and whenever you commit a crime, you pay black, and if you do, you can return it from the graveyard to the battlefield. This is also our first time talking about committing crimes in Magic.
Which is so sick that you can say you're committing a crime.
That's so fun. But of course, committing a crime is any time that you target an opponent, target anything that they control, and or cards in their graveyards.
Yeah, I want to also say something about this. Anything they control, I'm pretty sure, not positive, but pretty sure they control their spells on the stack. So if you counter a target spell, that is a spell that your opponent controls, that's committing a crime. Which makes sense, because counterspell should be a crime. Pretty sure that's how it works, and if it does, committing a crime is going to happen a lot more than we're thinking initially in CDH, I think, because stuff is getting countered all the time. This card in particular, I'm not why I'm pointing down, it's probably like here, I don't remember which side it goes on. This card is another combo piece with Phyrexian Altar and a Blood Artist. If you have Phyrexian Altar and a Blood Artist, you can ping them with the Blood Artist. When you sacrifice this, that's committing a crime, which means that you can cast this again with the mana that you make from the Phyrexian Altar and shoot him dead. 3-card combo, not going to see a ton of play, but there are some. Like Radadrabic. We just played against higher playing Radadrabic.
Yeah.
Maybe this goes in there. I think you're already playing a Blood Artist. Yeah, so this is just another kind of combo piece that is a potential in some maybe fringy decks.
Can confirm that countering spells is committing a crime.
Yeah, so that's going to come up a little bit more than I think we were initially thinking. At least I was thinking, like, targeting something they control, your initial thought is, like, on the battlefield.
On the board,
that's not necessarily true. So, yeah, I think this card is not the best. I think I'll probably give it around a 2, 2.5.
I'm going to say a 1.5.
If you get enough of these pieces where, like, it's a 3-card combo, but you have 6 slots from each piece, and it becomes much, you know what I mean? I think eventually it'll snowball. I see some potential with it, but nothing in Tier 1 just yet.
Insatiable Avarice.
Not confident at all.
Not at all. It's a black mana for a sorcery with spree. For 2 generic, you can search your library for a card, then shuffle and put that card on top. And for 2 more black mana, you can have target player draw 3 cards and lose 3 life.
It's too much mana. Overall, it's too much mana for most decks.
So
right? What it does is strong, though. It's an Imperial Seal and it's an Ancestral Recall in 1 card.
Yeah, right?
Like, that's strong. The only commander that this will maybe see play is Kurik. I think Kurik would like this. Because Kurik can play 2 generic mana and then lose 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 total life in order to search your library for any card, put it into your hand, and then draw 2 extra cards. I think at 2 generic mana, that's probably worth it.
Kurik seems really good there. Yeah.
I think that's probably good. I don't know if any other commander is going to be able to afford to pay the cost for this. There's so many other better options. And even Kurik, there's so many better options. Maybe Kurik doesn't drop down to this, but that's a deck that needs as many tutors as possible.
Yeah.
That's all it wants is a Kurik and a tutor, basically.
My problem with the spree cards is that I've been having a really hard time evaluating them because they can do so much, and they're all Culligan's commands. These cards that are way too expensive but can do like anything you need to get you out of a situation. So are they going to be good for that reason? Yes, but are they going to see play? Maybe not, because they're not really that efficient. So I think Insatiable Avarice is going to be a 2.5 because Crick's going to play it. But like any other deck is going to have a lot more efficient ways to tutor and to draw.
And I don't play standard much at all. I haven't played in a long time. But to me, this reads like a very powerful standard card because I know normally 3 mana draw 3s are pretty good, which is what this is. 3 mana to draw 3 cards and lose 3 life.
That's pretty good, yeah.
At a standard rate, like, that is higher than most things, and then being able to sometimes tutor. I mean, who cares about standard? I'm not sure, but maybe this is... I think Shieldred is still in standard, so you're already playing black cards.
True,
you probably want to go find your Shieldred.
There you go,
3 mana find the Shieldred, 4 mana cast the Shieldred. They're dead.
Bada bing, bada boom. There you go.
Lively Dirge is one in a black for another spree sorcery. For a generic, you can search your library for a card and put it into the graveyard, then shuffle. So that's just in tune right there at sorcery speed. And then for two generic, you can return up to two creature cards with total mana value four or less from your graveyard to the battlefield.
This is another one that's just a little overcosted of something that's already quite good, but there are not a lot of entombs in CDH since we only play one. We can only play one. There's just the entomb and then the other one that gets legendary.
It gets a non-legendary. Yeah, because it's unmarked grave.
There's entomb and unmarked grave, which is a great card. Those are both good. This is more expensive than both because this is a 3-mana entomb, which is bad.
This one is also sorcery speed. The other two are instants.
Yeah, so it is bad for that. But if you really want to dive in on Reanimator, you're gonna want to play this. I think. There's not enough effects. You need some of the bad ones if you really want to go for that. And reanimating two things, that's not nothing. That's gonna be something. Overall, not many decks are going to play this, but I do think specific reanimator strategies are going to be excited to see another entomb effect.
If Dockside is one of the things you're bringing back and it can like kind of help pay you back on some of this mana, that does seem pretty good, especially if you can like pair it with... I have no other examples of something that I'm putting into my graveyard a ton.
Maybe
the Phantasmal
Image, so you get two.
Oh,
Dockside.
One that died? Yeah. Yeah, actually, that is pretty good. Wow.
Maybe something like that.
So Lively Dirge is just a Sun Titan in a hat? Is that what it is?
Sure. Yeah, okay.
Great, okay.
I feel like Sun Titan's thing is the every turn part, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess, yeah, that's... What do you give this card?
Similar to the one that we just talked about, Insatiable Avarice. I think this one, that's not what it's called.
It's like a 2.5?
2.5, I think. Yeah, it is what it's called. Yeah, I think around a 2.5, maybe a little bit less. Probably like closer to a 2, because I'm not sure that any deck is going to play this, whereas I think at least one will play the other one. I think this one's closer to a 2.
All right, let's give it a 2. Okay. Servant of the Stinger. I haven't read this card yet. This is one in a black for a 1/3 human warlock. It's got death touch, and when it deals combat damage to a player, if you've committed a crime this turn, you can sacrifice it, and if you do, you search your library for a card and put it into your hand. Oh, so it's like a delayed demonic tutor?
It's another Wishclaw Talisman. We talked about one of these from the last set, that it was like kind of like a Wishclaw Talisman. Invest the mana early, get the thing later. This is kind of like that, except you only ever invest the 2 mana in it, just that. The death touch is pretty unique. Players aren't going to want to block sometimes.
No, this will force them to deal that combat damage it needs to.
Yeah, what's going to happen, though, is a lot of times, like, it's not going to be able to connect, right? The people are not going to let you just search for any card, so it's not going to connect a lot of the times, but... There are many situations where you'll be at a pot and one player just doesn't have any blockers. They weren't thinking about this card. Overall, I know it's not quite as powerful as Wishclaw Talisman, obviously, but I do think it's close and I do think some decks might consider it.
Do you have a rating for it? I think I have a rating for it.
I think maybe like a 3-ish, maybe 2.5, 3.
I think it's a 2.
2, solid.
Yeah,
two.
I think it's a solid 2.
I think
yeah.
This is much better than the card that we just talked about, Lively Dirge.
I think it's probably... Yeah, Lively Dirge is just so much mana. I keep forgetting that Lively Dirge is a generic and a black.
Yeah, it's 3 mana for an entomb.
To still do nothing, yeah. Whereas this can at least also help you draw a card with Timna, right?
Yeah, and it's also like, on the turn that you play it, it like stops you from getting attacked because the Najeel player, the Timna player is probably not going to send
into
you.
Yeah, so this does take a little bit of setup, but it puts you in a really good position while it's on board. And I don't know, I feel like a lot of people like their things. I feel like if you can't favorably deal 3 damage to it with one of your creatures, you'll let this get in so that it can sacrifice and someone can tutor, right?
The tricky part is you have to commit the crime, so you have to do something beforehand to still turn it on.
That's true, but I feel like crime committing is still going to be pretty easy.
I
even
think
if like
part.
You're just snapping a creature back to the hand to get rid of the blocker so you can get in nicely.
I think that's why it kind of works. You kill their one creature to get out of the way, which you've targeted something, and then you can like attack and get something.
Now you get your win condition into your
hand. Yeah, exactly. I'm going to give it a 3. I think this card might do something.
Okay, I'm still going to give it a 2. Karavek the Punisher is next. This is 1/2 black for a 3/3 legendary creature human warlock. Whenever you commit a crime, exile up to 1 target black card from your graveyard and copy it. You may cast the copy, and if you do, you lose 2 life.
It's kind of a makeshift Yawgmoth's Will.
Yeah, really?
We're getting a lot of cards that look like other powerful cards at more mana and difficult to do. It probably means that they're not quite good enough, because the reason those cards are powerful is because they're easy to work and easy to make possible. This one is just, it's one that I'm looking at, though. I think that effect is strong.
Do you remember the name of the card that we were talking about with our patrons the other day? That is the 5-mana black creature with the 0-mana ability that allows you to just, like, infinitely commit crimes so that you can cast everything out of your graveyard with this?
Eater of the Dead.
Eater of the Dead?
Eater of the Dead is a card that will allow you to infinitely commit crimes. In response to itself, you can target something in their graveyard, and before it exiles, activate it again to target it again, target again, target again. Do it 1,000 times, and while you're doing that, with this Karavek out, you can target all the black spells in your graveyard and create the Yawgmoth's Will. Now that's, you have to spend your 3-mana commander, you have to spend your 5-mana on this card, you have to have a whole bunch of stuff in your graveyard. That's never gonna happen. But it could. It's something.
Like, if you demonic tutored for the Eater of the World... Is that the name of the card?
That sounds right. I forgot already.
And so did I. But if you demonic tutor for that card, now demonic tutor's in your graveyard. So, like, it can kind of set up these big combo turns where you're flashing back tons of spells from your graveyard to win the game. It's really cool in Glissa because every time I'm using, like, a 1-for-1 removal spell, I can copy another one from my graveyard, which will also trigger itself again, too. So, like, I can just kind of keep chaining through the board that way. So... very excited for that.
Yeah, I think it'll be good. Honestly, probably, I don't know.
I'm giving it a 1.5.
Yeah, 3 is just a lot of mana. 1.5.
Pitiless Carnage is 3 and a black for a sorcery. Sacrifice any number of permanents you control, then draw that many cards, and you can plot this card for 1 and 2 black.
Korvold. I just want to say Korvold really quick. I mean, this is doubles your Korvold, essentially, yeah. Right? You get two draws for each thing that you sacrifice. I could definitely see a world where you turn 1, plot this, turn 2, cast Korvold, sacrifice your 5 or 6 permanents in play, and draw like 10 cards or something, and like win the game soon after that. I don't know. I could see that being a play pattern.
Plotting this seems really good because you just float mana with your lands, you sacrifice them with this card, you play Underworld Breach. Now you have no permanents in play, but your whole fucking hand's full, your graveyard's full, and you just win the game.
4 mana is a lot, and then we're still not really sure how plotting is, so I'm not sure if it goes. It's not in every Underworld Breach deck. I'm not really sure about that. But
no.
Specifically, Korvold that can like benefit from every aspect of this card. I got to assume you're at least looking at this. Maybe you don't need it. Maybe Ad Nauseam is enough. Maybe you don't need another one. 4 mana. Hurts your ad nauseum a little bit. I don't know. I would be looking to try this card in Korvold for sure, though.
It definitely seems very interesting. Yeah. Do you think it has a home outside of Korvold?
I don't know. I don't think so. That ability is strong, sure. Yes, that ability is very powerful, but I feel like you have to be able to use the things that you sacrifice. You have to kind of be like benefiting for it in other ways, because otherwise, if you sack all your lands and your artifacts to draw 5 or 6, 7 cards, then what? You know what I mean? Like, you have to be able to make sure that you can win.
I guess that's true.
So you have to be able to kind of control it a little bit more than what it naturally does.
It's like Rograkh Sylas would never look at this, right?
I don't know about never.
If there's any other deck, it's a Rograkh deck that would want that. Maybe not Rograkh Sylas, maybe like Rograkh Raihan or something like that.
Maybe
if you
Rograkh Tevish, because you can sacrifice the tokens that you make.
You make like a ton of them.
Yeah, that could be something. Or maybe, I don't want to say Najila, because I think you want your bodies to kill your opponents rather than sack the warriors. And by the time you have enough where this draws enough cards, you're going to be killing them dead soon. So
I think the new Samut is just way too good in Najila to ever want Pitiless Carnage.
Yeah, but I do like it in Tevish. I think it could be something.
Yeah, I kind of like that too. That being said, though, I'm going to give it a 3.
3 sounds good.
3 might even be a little high too, just because we're really only talking about 2 decks here. So, but that's about a 3. I'll give it a 3.
I think it has high potential. I'm going to lock it in as a 3 also. There's one more black card that I forgot to mention that is not on here. The one that has effectively channel that I can't remember the name of it right now.
Harvester of Misery is 3 and 2 black for a spirit 5/4 with menace. When it enters the battlefield, other creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn. And for 1 and a black, you can discard it to have target creature get -2/-2 until end of turn.
Yeah, so that kind of fake channel ability is, I think, what I'm most interested in. This can kill a Grand Abolisher, which is one of maybe one other thing. I think Odawara is the only other thing that can do that on a combo turn, right?
Yeah.
Not
so
kill, but get rid of.
That means that you would be able to interact with the combo turn so that they're not safe anymore.
Touch the Spirit Realm is another one. There's not many that can actually interact with Grand Abolisher. That being said, that's pretty specific. That is a pretty specific thing that this does. And more often than not, I think I just want more versatile removal. I want to be able to kill anything. I want Dismember, or I want something that can kill more stuff.
Yeah, agreed. This is another great Glissa card.
Even though it's not really channel is a very strong ability. And we forget sometimes that, like, what the effect does is, like, that channel part, the fact that it's uncounterable, not a spell, that makes this card much stronger than just -2/-2. I just don't know what deck plays it, but I think this will see play in CDH. I'm just not sure where yet.
Yeah, I understand that. I just don't see this scene as much play as, like, any other channel ability that we have that is currently seeing play.
That's true.
Touch the Spirit Realm deals with so many more permanents. This only being able to deal -2/-2 to something means that, like, Grand Abolisher is really the only thing that this is dealing with, right?
Or, and maybe like Orcish Bowmaster or Collector Oof. There's not many, though.
Okay, there's stuff that it kills, but stuff that, like, not casting a spell where that matters, Grand Abolisher is the only one where that matters. And again, I don't want to throw in a card that is going to be Justice Over Bullet for one thing, especially when it has a CMC of 5 and probably hurting my ad nauseum. I'm not playing it in those decks. So I know the effect's really powerful. Me, personally, I'm just a little bit down on it because a lot of the decks that already want that already have access to Odawara or Touch of Spirit Realm or, like, something else. And black is using its life total too much for a 5 mana value creature to be, like, what I'm actively clawing at.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Definitely makes sense. The only thing I'm thinking about it, maybe a little bit into Natana in Blood Pod, because you can Eldritch Evolution into then you can kind of pseudo wipe the board.
It can actually be like a Wrath from like getting rid of your Timna that
exactly.
way.
Exactly. Whereas like where I think Blood Pod can play cards like this because casting it for 5 mana is like not only not the end of the world, but like pretty good sometimes. It will kill your Timna, right? Because it's your stuff too.
It's all creatures. All other creatures get minus 2.
So you
got to
time it out just right. But I agree, it's not going to see play in a ton of decks. I probably for now would give it a 2, but I would have the potential to be very wrong. I think it could be much better.
I'm also going to give it a 2, but I would not be surprised to see it go down from there, actually, even. But I think 2's fine for it.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
All right, let's move on to red. Generous Plunderer is 1 in a red for a 2/2 human rogue with menace. At the beginning of your upkeep, you create a treasure token, and when you do, target opponent creates a tap treasure token. When it attacks, it deals damage to defending player equal to the number of artifacts they control.
This is a big hitter. If you're looking for more Saracen and type things, if you're looking more for more ways to just get your opponents dead, this is great for that. The mana is fine. Giving your opponent a tap treasure is fine that it's tapped because it helps it deal one more damage and the menace is good and yada yada, but giving your opponent's mana is not good.
I don't want to advocate that the slow grind decks that play like mana barbs type cards that are slowly pinging at your opponent, I do not want to suggest that that's something that is actively powerful, but this is another thing that is slowly building to that strategy where the slower the format gets, the more we can actually deal chunks of damage to players. But what I like about this is that it's not just dealing 2 damage like a lot of those effects will deal. It can potentially deal 5 or 6, especially when it's giving an additional treasure to the player.
I agree. I think this card could see something. It could be something in certain decks, but certainly not in all decks. I don't think 4 and 5 color decks are going to go to it much. I think specifically Boros or Naya-ish decks that are very like on the plan of aggro. My goal is aggro. Maybe Jetmir wants something like this.
I could see that too.
But besides that, not much. I think it's a 2.5. It's got some decent upside. The mana is nice, but yeah, it's just that damage is rarely going to be relevant, and giving your opponent treasure is often going to feel bad.
Agreed. Yeah, 2.5 is where it's going to be here. Magda the Horde Master is 1 in a red for a 2/2 legendary creature, Dwarf Berserker. Whenever you commit a crime, you create a tapped treasure token, but this ability only triggers once each turn.
So sorry to interrupt, but they protected this so well, because can you imagine every time you counter a spell, make a treasure? Holy fuck, it would be so good.
Yeah, I mean, it's also create a tapped treasure
exactly,
as well.
Like they protected it. It's tapped, and it's once per turn. Don't even think about breaking this card.
But in typical Magda fashion, we don't care if it's tapped because you can sacrifice 3 treasures to create a 4/4 red scorpion dragon creature with flying and haste only at sorcery speed. Seems like a great Magda card.
Yeah, in the other Magda.
In the other Magda.
Magda's a good Magda card.
Yeah, this Magda is a good Magda card. I would not play this as my commander, but the ability for a 2-mana dwarf to generate you a significantly larger amount of treasures than 1 per turn potentially is really great. You play a lot of ways to target things in Magda because you play so much creature removal because
you need to get rid of opposition agent.
Exactly.
That's the real reason.
That's the reality of the situation. So you play a lot of things at target, and when there is an opposition agent in play, this also gives you something to do with these treasures. There were many times in my Magda career that I would have 19 treasures and nothing to do with them. So if I could make 6 4/4s and just destroy the player that was giving me the problems, that would have solved so many issues.
Yeah, I think this card is great just for exactly that reason. It allows you to like win the game without winning the game if you can't go it for some reason like that. It's also like important to note that like this Commander is close to being a good commander on its own. It's a two-mana creature that makes mana and is an outlet. If you have infinite treasures, you can sacrifice all of them for infinite 4/4s and just kill your opponent.
They have haste, right? You just send them at them.
So, like, this could be a fine commander. The only thing that's holding it back from being a commander at all is I think the other Magda is better. Just that tutor outlet is just so much more crucial. But like you said, if there's something that stops you from searching your library, the opposition agent, but you're still able to make infinite treasures, you can sack all those treasures for 4/4s in the other Magda with this Magda and kill your opponents. I love that.
This just means that every time we get a new Magda card, it's going to be busted in Magda. They're just going to keep being two mana dwarves that we get that make multiple treasures and multiple instances of treasures.
Does this have you thinking about putting Magda back together at all?
A little bit. Honestly, it will depend on what it looks like.
It's hard to have Atali and Magda, I feel like.
It is hard to have Atali and Magda. I liked Magda when it was a little faster, and I don't want to play a stacks deck, and I understand you got to do with your commander what you got to do to be able to play her in the meta, but I also liked playing Magda and not like having to wait until the turn that I can finally go off because Orcish Bowmaster has been in play for so long. So I don't know.
It's something. Magda's still great. This card is a good inclusion for Magda, I think.
I'll tell you what, though. The next card is what's going to make me not build Magda because it's going to be another Atali card.
Yeah.
And it's the best card in the set. This is Molten Duplication.
That can't be right.
It's not. Okay. Molten Duplication.
Okay. Because you can't be really pronouncing that word like that.
This is one in a red for a sorcery. You create a token that's a copy of target artifact or creature you control, except it's an artifact in addition to its other types. It gains haste until end of turn, and you sacrifice it at the beginning of your next end step.
Twin Flame. This is an exact card that already sees play in a very popular combo, except this one is better.
Yeah, exactly, because you can also make a copy of the One Ring if you wanted to.
Yes, you can copy your own artifacts if you need to. Sometimes that'll be relevant. Something in my head that I'm excited about for maybe Niv-Mizzet players is if on turn one, you play Land and Nothing, and then on turn two, you cast a Jewel Lotus, and you cast Molten Duplication on your Jewel Lotus, and you have 6 mana for Niv-Mizzet right away. That's going to be fun. That's going to be a nice turn two Niv-Mizzet.
Oh my god, that's so wild. So I didn't even think about that.
That's pretty good. Also, like resetting the One Ring after you've drawn 1,000 cards, but you can't quite get there yet. You need one more turn and you're about to die from it. You can make a copy of it, regain the protection, keep the new one so you don't take damage on the next upkeep. That's going to come up sometimes. Really what this is a dual caster combo piece and an Atali piece is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so this being the fourth clone you get to play in Atali just is really going to skyrocket Atali now again.
Quark and Sakashima, another deck that's going to play this for sure.
Exactly. Yeah, any deck that you were playing Twin Flame, you are going to be playing Molten Duplication. I don't know of many scenarios where you're going to continue playing Heat Shimmer.
Heat Shimmer, I believe, is now dead because Heat Shimmer was already kind of questionable at 3 mana. It just wasn't quite there.
A lot of the decks that were playing the dual caster combos only needed Twin Flame.
Whereas now, I think you very well can play Twin Flame and Molten Duplication because in those red decks, being able to copy your Dockside is also like super helpful at 2 mana, whereas 3 mana, it's just obviously not as good.
And they both have like weird upsides where like if you have something else you want to copy with Strive and Twin Flame, like that's worth it too.
And I know Quark has done that before. It can be a great play in Quark to when you have Sock and Schema out, you can copy your Quark and a Dockside and really fucking go crazy.
Yeah. So these two cards are totally going to be played together a ton and it's totally transforming your dual caster package.
Absolutely. Deck is card is great. It's not a 5 because it's not going to see play in every red deck,
but it's a 4.5 in my mind.
Yeah, I think it's a 4.5. In the decks that play it, it's a huge boon. It's a great TDH card. Really,
maybe
good.
We should have talked about like Twin Flame and Dual Caster in the Red Cards podcast.
We didn't?
No, we didn't.
We didn't?
That was a miss, yeah.
How did we miss those? That's crazy. That's so funny.
Going back, I didn't think that we were going to rate them that high. And now I'm like, well, I fucking love Molten Duplication.
Yeah.
maybe I would have, yeah.
Our opinions change. I don't know.
Here's a card I don't know anything about. This is Return the Favor. This is 2 red for an instant with Spree. For a generic, you can copy an instant sorcery spell or activated ability or triggered ability for that matter. And you can choose new targets for that copy. Or for a generic, you can change the target of a spell or ability with a single target.
3 mana interaction is ass.
That's the problem. Yeah, this was on the list from when I really didn't know how to evaluate these Spree cards because this does so much. It reads like Deflecting Swat, but Deflecting Swat is free.
Right.
This is so much mana.
Copying a Dockside Extortionist is going to be nice. You can copy their trigger. That'll be fun. That can happen.
That is true. Yeah, being able to copy triggers is very nice.
The issue is you have to leave up 3 mana, which means it's 3 mana that you didn't spend on your turn advancing your game state. And what if they don't cast the Dockside? Then you wasted 3 mana for nothing?
You can copy a Thassa's Oracle ability on the stack, and then in response,
you taint it back too and win.
Yeah, and then you win first because of how the stack works.
Yeah, you absolutely can do those things. Maybe that's enough. I just think there's so many other good cards. I mean, maybe this will actually secretly act as Born Upon the Wind, and like what you're saying is you can win on top of somebody else, but that feels like much more difficult to set
that
up.
That feels like Magical Christmas Land.
That feels like a little bit like that me, doesn't feel like that's going to happen a ton.
So I think this card is realistically a one. No one's ever going to play it, but 3 days ago, I thought it was really good.
Someone's going to get you. Someone's going to get you one time on this one. It's going to be a great story, but overall, yeah, I don't think it's super powerful. I give it a 1.2.
Play it in your Tainted Pact decks until that happens and then take it out.
If you're in Rakdos Tainted Pact and you're in Tainted Pact Praetor's Grasp where you're looking for their Thassa's Oracle and you're like, here's another way for me to round out the I want to win with your Thassa's Oracle part of my win condition, like maybe you take out the Dual Caster Mage out of your Rakdos deck and you say, I can only win if there's Thoracle at the tip pod and I'm winning with your shit. Maybe that's something.
Wow.
Maybe that's a philosophy. Maybe that's a theory that we haven't dived into
yet. This is next level CEDH we're coming up with over here.
I think no win conditions all around. I'm going to win with your shit. Maybe
yeah,
this
really
goes there.
Wow.
I'll give it a 1.3.
1.3. There we go. Memory Vessel is 3 and 2 red for an artifact that you can tap it and exile it to have each player exile the top 7 cards of their library. Until your next turn, players may play cards they exiled this way, and they can't play cards from their hand. So this is only available to be activated at sorcery speed.
Right.
But this is Memory Jar, but after rereading this, I'm realizing that it's actually cooler than Memory Jar.
In some ways.
Because Memory Jar's ability lasts until end of turn, but this is until your next turn, which means that each of your opponents will still draw a card for turn, but won't have access to that card until the effect of Memory Vessel goes away.
I guess it's not worse. They can still play the exiled cards from their hand as well. They just can't play the new card that they've drawn.
So this is like kind of a combo with Draenith Magistrate, because then they can't play anything.
Yeah.
And then you're the only person that can actually utilize this as a wheel.
You like lock them out for a turn more or less.
But what's really good about Memory Jar is that the upside of having those cards go away at the end of turn means that it's just like basically getting rid of 7 potential resources for your opponents, and they're like not going to have the chance to use them at all. Whereas this technically could be Wheel of Fortuning for your opponents if you don't have Draenith to combo with this.
And Memory Jar being able to activate as an instant is
That's
a big, the fact that you can force your opponents to draw cards with the Thassa's Oracle, whatever, like that's something. And Memory Jar doesn't even see a ton of play. Memory Jar is just a very powerful card in the history of Magic, and this looks similar to it, which is why we're comparing it to it. Overall, I don't think this is the best one ever. It's a 5-mana draw 7. It's just we have 3-mana draw 7s in the format.
I think in Magda, I would still play Memory Jar over this. Yeah. But it's just an interesting card.
It's an interesting card. It's a potentially powerful card. I'm sure someone can do something with it. Overall, I'm not super excited for CDH, but I do think it'll make some waves in Magic as a whole.
Yeah, probably a 1.5.
Yeah, 1.5 sounds good.
Is what I'll give it right now. Our next card is the first in a cycle of new cards we're going to be getting featuring Occupations. This is Pest Control. This is a white and a black for a sorcery that says destroy all non-land permanents with mana value 1 or less, and you can cycle it for 2.
Yeah, dude, this card, it's got me thinking about a lot of stuff. It, as far as removal goes, it's got a lot of things going for it. Gets rid of Mystic Remoras, gets rid of Soul Rings, gets rid of Treasures, gets rid of Mana Dorks, gets rid of all that stuff, and when it's dead, it still draws you a card.
It's never really dead.
It's never really dead, exactly. My issues with it, number one, it's a sorcery, not an instant. So it's not great at stopping win conditions, it's only great at stopping production. It only stops half of what's important, you know what I mean? That's kind of not great. 2 mana is a little bit high for interaction. At 2 mana, we're playing things like Abrupt Decay, which is uncounterable instant speed removal that stops a win condition and can also free you from stacks pieces. We play Cyclonic Rift, which has the bonus of being overloaded. We have, you know what I mean? So at 2 mana, what a removal spell does has to be very, very good.
And everything that you just said is a flexible spell that hits multiple permanent types and has upside on top of that, too.
That's similar, because this hits multiple permanent types, and it has upside with being the cycling.
Well, yes. However, though, the other things can, like, just wipe out anything you need them to wipe out, though, too. Whereas this is very limited to that specific mana value. And we've historically seen that, like, these cards are talked about a lot. However, they're not actually played a ton.
I would rather have removal that goes both ways. I want the removal to, if I need it destroy a Ristic Study, but also if I needed to stop a Birthing Pod in the middle of its line, or stop, you know what I mean? Like, I want it to be able to stop my opponents and help me, whereas this really, I mean, it does stop your opponents, but not from winning the game, just in, like, certain very specific ways.
And I don't even know how good it is at getting rid of Mystic Remora. Like, Mystic Remora is not one of these cards that I'm looking for other cards to put in my deck to get rid of.
Maybe we should. I'm looking for Mystic Remora all the time now.
I know, but just, like, you could also just be patient,
yeah,
and play, like, good cards in your deck.
Just play around it.
Yeah, or how about, like, you could play a Dockside combo with Teamer Sabretooth, right? You can, like, play win conditions that are more creature-based, right?
It's better, rather than answer, just win a different way. It's better to ignore than address. In Magic, a lot of times, it's just how it is. Just more advantageous for you to try to ignore what everyone's doing rather than try to answer what everyone's doing, because you can't do it. There's too much shit.
Silver bullets suck, and control is not good in CEDH. We should be doing something else.
That's fair. That's fair.
I'm going to give this card a 2, because this is a card that a lot of people are talking about, but I don't think it's going to see longevity in the format.
I think also a 2. I think in other 1v1 formats, I think this card gets much better. I think in Legacy and Modern even.
Legacy, Modern, probably maybe. Vintage too. Like, yeah, just getting rid of, like, all the Moxen.
Getting rid of permanents one or less, like the fact that it gets rid of, like, a Chalice of the Void can be super relevant in certain situations, because
yeah,
Chalice is going to be on
true.
One. And whatever. Like, there's multiple implications in other Eternal formats, but yeah, CDH, 2 sounds right. Not going
to
be
Never
the
find a reason. To want to get rid of people's mana crypts.
Yeah, sorcery
really.
Just sucks. Sorcery
That's
sucks.
Also true. Yeah.
Instant, like, it's hard to understate how powerful instant is opposed to sorcery.
Let's talk about the Vraska Joins Up card. This is one in a green for a legendary enchantment that when it enters the battlefield, you put a Death Touch counter on each creature you control. Death Touch counter, that's permanent.
Time warning, run the time siren.
Whoop, whoop.
This time wants that. Counters
woo.
On all stuff.
Whenever a legendary creature you control deals damage in combat to a player, draw a card.
That's exactly what it says.
That is word for word.
Yeah, so Sisay, the two commanders that I'm thinking are Tayim and Sisay. Yeah. Tayim cares about counters going on the creatures. You're going to be able to move the counters around. You're going to be able to reanimate stuff. You can reel stuff. This is, I feel like, a perfect card for Tayim. I could be wrong. I'm no Tayim pilot, but it feels like what you want to be doing with Tayim. The counters and everything, the Death Touch is nice. And then that, sometimes it'll draw you cards. You're playing with a lot of creatures in your deck. You're going to connect. Like, it's going to draw cards for just 2 mana. That's great. Also, for Sisay, it itself is a legendary permanent that you can tutor for if you need to, which you might not, but again, legendary theme. I don't know that Sisay wants this as much as I'm pretty sure Tayim wants this, but it seems like it does what Sisay wants.
Especially, I think the color combination of black-green is something that Sisay might want, because I don't know in their current line how many black-green cards they're running.
The Planeswalker. Tyvar, the puncher.
Oh, they are playing Tyvar. Maybe they want this a little bit less, and especially because they're not playing so many creatures now, maybe they're a little bit less interested,
yeah.
But like,
Sisay's been real good lately, and you're real pressed for slots, so I'm not sure if Sisay wants to just, like, value legendary shit, but it feels like a good Tayim card. Those
it's
counters,
definitely a Tayim card. Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is doling for 2 mana, like 5 or 6 counters in Tayim a lot of the time.
Putting the Death Touch counters on means a lot of times your opponents are not going to want to block. They're not going to want to waste their creatures.
No.
So you're going to, like, draw a lot of cards for 2 mana. This could be, like, and this is very hyper, like, this could be like a 2-mana Ristic Study. This could be your, it's a 2-mana permanent. It's going to draw me 3 cards a turn cycle. It's a little Timna. It's going to, you know what I mean? It's
honestly,
gonna do
that.
That
deck plays Thalia, right? So, like, having
Which
a
deck?
First strike, Tayim, right?
Tayim, I'm pretty sure.
Having, like, a first strike Death Toucher is the ultimate attacker at all times. So, like, I can understand how you could be getting in with that. Yeah.
I like the card. I think I'd probably give it, like, a high 3. Maybe I'll give it a 3.3.
3.3 is high for just being in one deck,
Let's
primarily.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah, you're right.
That's closer to let's say 2.5 for that, I would say.
The reason why I say this, I don't know that it goes in just one deck. It very well could go in black-green creature-based decks as just, like, another way to draw cards. Maybe I'm looking at it too much of, like, a specific, the counters, and more of just, like,
okay.
This is actually going to be a second Timna.
My rebuttal is name a black-green creature deck.
Timnatana. Creature.
Okay. I was thinking of, like, just a black green.
Yeah,
deck.
No, I
but
mean,
like,
black green X, anything that plays black green colors.
But even then, like, this only triggers off of legendary creatures.
That's very true.
Like,
the
it's not just
yeah.
like any of your
yeah,
good stacks creatures are getting in. Like,
it's closer to drawing one card or maybe 2 a turn. Never,
all the
rare,
good
rarely
creatures
three.
That would trigger this, you just cut, man.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I think maybe closer to a 2. Maybe I'm being a little bit more hype, but
I'll give
you
2.5.
We'll
just
go
because
2.5.
There are some cards, some decks that actively want it.
I think the potential is quite high for this one in the right deck. It's going to be good. Yeah, 2.5.
Jolene.
Jolene.
Jolene. Jolene. Yo, I want to go back to Dollywood so bad. All right. Jolene Plundering Pugilist is one, a red and a green for a 4-2 legendary creature human mercenary that says whenever you attack with one or more creatures with power 4 or greater, create a treasure token. And for one in a red, you can sack a treasure to have Jolene deal a damage to any target.
Couple things. This itself has 4 power, so this will draw you a treasure. When I say draw you, I mean create you a treasure when it, what does it do? Attack with one or more when you attack with it. So you attack, create the treasure. It'll do that. That's good. Mana is powerful. It's also an outlet if you make infinite. So if you have Dockside Team or Sabertooth, you can shoot the table. So it's an outlet in your command zone.
Which is really good. I also love this snake horse that she has in the back in the art. This thing is so cool.
The one damage to any target will be relevant sometimes. You can ping off stuff, kind of control the board a little bit. That might be helpful.
But I think most of the time you're just going to have infinite treasures by the time you're really doing this and just trying to win. Jolene's pretty cool. There's, I think, better things to be doing in the command zone with infinite treasures in the format right now.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give Jolene a 2.
Yeah, I agree. If that first ability was like an each player situation where you can make upwards of like 3 treasures
a
turn.
Oh, this would be so sick.
I think you're getting somewhere, but it's a little bit, I don't want to say protected, but like I feel like this card was more powerful and they brought it back. It seems like to me. I'm not sure if that's actually the case.
Because I don't think this card sees play in the 99 of anything, right? Because even if you had like a 4 power commander, like this thing is already triggering itself. So it's not really getting you any extra value.
I could very well see there like certainly is a casual commander gruel strategy of 4 power and higher. There's enough of those things that whenever 4 power does this, draw a card, make a treasure, whatever, that I think as a casual commander, this card's going to be awesome. But as a CDH ones, you're just not going to trigger it enough. And like you said, there's better things to have better outlets in the command zone. Like if you want a dockside outlet, just play like Thrasios Bruise or play for more colors.
Play a Tally if you want to be in this
color.
Exactly.
There's so many other things that do it.
Loot, the key to everything, is a green, a red, and a blue for a 1-2 beast noble legendary creature with ward 1. At the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top X cards of your library, where X is the number of card types among other permanents you control. You may play those cards this turn. So I've seen a lot online about people saying, oh, loot's going to get you anywhere from 2 to 3 additional cards. I think the reality is that it's easy to set loot up to get you like 4 additional cards a lot of the times.
Really?
Yeah.
I think often it'll be 2, maybe 3. What are you thinking for the fourth one? Because artifact and creature is easy. It itself is the creature, and then to have an artifact, that's easy to do. 2 is simple.
The list that I put together for the channel has 11 enchantments, so I think 3 is going to be an incredibly natural number to be at. But even then, we have 2 battles in the deck. You control battles, and Planeswalker is another type, and Minx and Boo Timeless Hero is a Planeswalker that's really good.
Oh, sure. Yeah, oh, sure.
So I think you have the potential to have this actually get you a ton more cards than we initially thought.
My opinion, I think the Ward 1 is a little bit nice on this card. I like that. I like that it doesn't die to Orcish Bowmaster. And I think the reality is it's probably going to get you 2 more often than not. I think enchantments for the third one is going to be reasonable. 2 battles, it's not going to happen very often, very rarely. You only have 2 or 3 Planeswalkers, not going to happen. Not only that, your Planeswalker has to survive, and most of them are 3 or 4 mana, so you're like going to play loot, untap, play your commander, untap again, and then like have the Planeswalker still be alive.
Oh, there is already a lot of stuff that we're doing in this deck that seems like we're living on a prayer.
Yeah, if you did go the Underworld Breach early, that sucks if you're not ready to play it.
Yeah, but like I did try to put in as many things as possible, like Eternal Witness, Noxious Revival, and Dryad's Revival type effects, so that way, if I did exile something prematurely, the goal is just cast it because you can get it out of your graveyard pretty easy still. Not only that, I did throw in Paradox Haze your recommendation.
Paradox Haze is a great one.
I feel like we're already asking a lot out of loot in this deck that we might as well just ask the world from him.
Did you do any extra turns?
You know, I thought about doing extra turns because really like an obvious thing to me seemed like you just stack it full of extra turns, put Thassa's Oracle as like another win condition in, but then like I feel like I'm going to exile Thoracle at the wrong time.
Yeah, I don't think you need Thoracle.
I didn't really know if like extra turns actually fit. I put in Song of Creation instead.
Interesting. Okay.
And you just kind of storm off a little bit that way instead.
Yeah, I could see it. I think loot's neat. I think a 3-mana 1-2 with ward that has a mini Dark Confidant that allows you to draw 2 extra cards a turn, I think is a fine rate.
The only other card I want to point out is that it actually turns long-term plans into a really good tutor.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, because that is instant speed, and it sucks that it's 3 mana, but you can set it up pretty easily so that you're guaranteeing to it being in your exile pile with loot.
I could see that. Yeah, that's a great include. Overall, loot's probably not going to see a ton of play, but just because of how cute it is, people are definitely going to try it. And I think it's close to CDH just because the card advantage is pretty good on 3 mana. So
that's the thing, yeah.
I give it like a 2.8.
I would say it's about a 2.82. Yeah. 2.8. Stella Lee, wild card, is one, a red and a blue for a 2/4 human legendary rogue. Whenever you cast your second spell each turn, exile the top card of your library. Until the end of your next turn, you may play that card. And you can tap it to copy target instant or sorcery spell you control. Choose new targets for the copy and only activate it if you've cast three or more spells this turn.
At its base level, that tap ability, that is a combo win the game. If you got a spell that says draw a card and untap a creature, you cast that as your third or more spell, targeting the Stella, and then you can tap the Stella to copy the spell, which would untap the Stella and draw you one card. Now, that card that you already cast, that's still in the stack, so you're allowed to still, before it resolves, hold priority, tap Stella again, copy again, untapping Stella and drawing through your deck, and there are several one mana cards that do this. The bad part is you have to wait for its Stella to untap. Normally, that's not so good. But you get some card advantage, which the first ability, which is really nice, and only 3 mana, and big, big 2/4 buttness. I think this card's something.
I think it is, too. You're in really good colors as well, and having a lot of those 1-mana cantrips.
Yeah.
The Wisps.
Yeah.
Even, like, Preordain and Ponder, it works with nicely, so...
Well, you need to untap the creature, so, it doesn't work. It doesn't actually go infinite with, like, those.
But there's, like, Twiddles and stuff that draw cards.
I don't think Twiddle draws a card. You have to specifically both untap a creature and draw a card to draw through your deck.
Well, that's why I
said
Twiddles and stuff. They're Twiddles. It's not Twiddle itself. It's
a
Twiddle.
Well, Twiddle untaps a permanent.
Yes,
card.
That's why I'm saying it's Twiddles. It's like
disagreeing with you here. I don't think an untap a draw is a Twiddle.
See, I still call that a Twiddle.
I think that's extra.
See, you're
Those
wrong.
Those are cantrips.
No, a cantrip is Ponder. That's it, where all it does
card.
Is
cantrip
look at...
Cantrip replaces itself.
That's the act of just that. But I wouldn't call a card that just says that a cantrip. I would say it has a cantrip effect on it.
You can say
but like,
you want.
I wouldn't call... I don't know.
Either way, I think
I'm annoyed by this conversation. Because I'm wrong.
Either way, I think Stella's nice. It's a combo piece with a couple different stuff. It's card advantage in the command zone. Pretty easy to cast. Blue-red are good colors to be in. I like Stella. I think it's going to be an actual card. I don't know if it's going to be the card. I don't know if it's better than Kraken Sakashima or Niv-Mizzet in that Is It category. Maybe. I don't know. But I think I'll give it like a 3.4 for right now.
I'll say 3.4 as well. I like that. She's got a lot of potential, so it's just up to time to see how she turns out. Vihan Goldwhacker. Vihan Goldwhacker is... I can't just not think of that.
The Whacker. This one's whacking.
He's whacking. He's a red, a white, and
It's Goldwhaker, right?
Oh, is it Waker?
Yeah.
It probably is.
Probably Whacker would have to be a CK.
Well, what's a gold waker?
Awakens the gold. He awakens it. They become alive.
Yeah,
read the card.
That makes sense because once we read the card, it'll make sense. Although whacking them also makes sense though.
Make them come alive.
Yeah,
really well. What does this card do?
Vihan is a black, a red, and a white for a 3/3 legendary creature dwarf warlock. It says other outlaws you control have vigilance and haste. And at the beginning of combat on your turn, you may have treasures you control become 3/3 construct assassin artifact creatures in addition to their other types until end of turn. So this is another dockside outlet. If you make infinite mana with these treasures, Vihan turns them all into 3/3s with haste so you can take out the table with combat damage.
Yep, I like that part of it. I don't really love the other part of it.
The rest of it sucks.
The haste and vigilance, those are powerful abilities, but like, are there enough of these creature types that like you're going to give enough to them as your commander? Like, in Mardu, you can just do so much. You can play Timna that draws you a card off the creatures, not just give them vigilance and haste, so I'm not sure about that. And then as the outlet, there's other things that do that too.
Timna Jessica alone just seems like it's going to overpower the gold whacker here.
I think so, but... We have been talking about more ways to just kill your opponent's dead. The first red card that we talked about, this is another one that, like, board's getting a little stacked out, don't know what to do. Let's turn these 6 extra treasures into 3/3s and attack and then just pass a turn or whatever. I don't know. I don't love that as a main strategy, but in, like, high power, I think this card is, like, something. In, like, 8s, this card is a good one.
I don't love the idea of trying to keep my treasures around either.
Right, I
want
to use them on mana. Like, they're good because they're mana. They're not good because they're 3/3s. So, overall on CDH, I don't love it, but it's something.
I'm going to give it a 2.
A lot of 2s. A lot of closies. A lot of ones that are... These cards are very close to being too powerful, and I can't quite see it yet. Maybe. But for me, just a 2.
All right, the next card is Rakdos the Muscle. This is two black and a red for a 6/5 legendary demon mercenary. It's got flying and trample. Whenever you sacrifice another creature, exile cards equal to its mana value from the top of target player's library. Until your next end step, you may play those cards, and mana of any type can be spent to play those cards. Sacrifice another creature to have Rakdos the Muscle gain indestructible until end of turn. And you tap it, but you can only do this once each turn.
Yeah, this one's got a lot of stuff going with it, too. That second ability is kind of like a regeneration ability, sort of, without actually being regenerate. Doesn't remove it from combat, but it kind of does a similar thing.
A lot of times what you do is, like, if they have a 5-power creature in combat, you sacrifice a thing so that tapping it doesn't actually matter.
Realistically, you're sacking for whatever. Indestructible tap, it doesn't matter. You want the cards. That's
you want the
doing.
Cards out you of your opponent's cards. Deck. Yeah, exactly. This deck was actually submitted to us to play on the channel by our patron Stormageddon.
Yeah, super excited to play it. Deck looks awesome.
Yeah, looks so cool. You play a lot of like really expensive creatures like Shadow of Mortality that is 15 mana, but not actually 15 mana. So
yeah, I'm also excited for like cards with Evoke and things like that that are bigger than they seem. You can pay a low amount of mana to get them into play quickly, and yeah, they'll sacrifice them. But this Rakdos says you can do it once a turn. Nothing about sorcery speed. So in response to the Evoke trigger sacrificing it, you can sacrifice it with Rakdos to still get the ETB effect that the Evoke creature gave you, but also draw 3 or 4 cards or whatever the mana cost of the thing is.
And between Ingachur and Shriek Maw, like, there's actually relative Evoke creatures that you have in this color combination.
Also important to note, a 6/5 flying trample is going to be like the biggest thing in play most of the time. You're going to just dominate like the battlefield a lot of times. Like, that's kind of something. This is an interesting card. It's again another one that's a little tricky to evaluate, but I think this card is good. It's going to draw you a lot of cards and draw you your opponent's stuff, exiling their stuff. We always talk about don't play around like potentially exiling something good from their deck. Yeah, if you exile the Thassa's Oracle, it makes it hard for them. Whatever. That's not going to happen that often, but it can.
So, of course, you play like a lot of other creatures that have great sacrifice value. So, like, even if you're only looking at one card, like, that's still fine because you also made an additional treasure or something.
It's also important to note that you can sacrifice once each turn, and you get the cards until your next end step. So, on your turn, you sacrifice something. On your opponent's turn, you sacrifice something. On your opponent's turn, sacrifice something. So, each opponent, you take 4 or 5 cards from each of them, and then when you untap, you still get all those cards until your end step, your next end step. So, I think for that reason, this is going to be like a build your own ad nauseum off of your opponents, build your own mnemonic betrayal. You have to play things like Dargo and the Evoke creatures and shit that like might be hard to like get in play cheap enough. But if you can go, I feel like this is going to be kind of like an Obnixilus commander where like if you get it moving, holy shit, you're going to have more decisions than you know what to do with. But getting it move, it might be a little tricky. I like this card. I'm probably going to give it a little bit higher than it deserves because I love Rakdos. The color combination and the
and
character.
And the dude, yeah.
And this card I just think is going to be super fun. And I'm playing it, I think, in our set game tomorrow. Right?
Yeah.
So I'm super excited to play for that. So I'm going to give it like a 3.5, but it's probably a little lower than that. But I'm going to give it a 3.5.
We're going to land solidly on that 3.5. Because
nice.
I think this deck sounds pretty fun. And the more I read this card, honestly, the better it is.
Yeah, I like it.
Roxanne Starfall Savant is
Roxanne!
You don't have to put on your red hat. It's blue in this photo, though. This is 3, a red and a green for a 4/3 legendary cat druid. When she enters the battlefield or attacks, you create a tapped colorless artifact token named Meteorite with when it enters the battlefield, it deals 2 damage to any target and tap it to add 1 mana of any color. And whenever you tap an artifact token for mana, you add 1 mana of any type that artifact token produced. This has a lot of really good words on it.
Got a lot of really good words on it. It's a mana doubler, so it's kind of like Kinnan. Not really, only for certain things, and it's 5 mana already. So I'm not saying it's like Kinnan in that way. But if you squint, you know what I mean? And also, that ETB, when it ETBs, the thing that it makes, it shoots right away, which means this is a food chain outlet, which means this is a Dockside Teamer Sabertooth outlet, which means this is a any infinite type of combo. This is an outlet for that. Or if you needed to, just cast it and shoot something off. Attack, or when it attacks also, attack, shoot something off. Make mana like, I don't know, Roxanne kind of does a lot.
Now, if you weren't playing Magic in 2012, Meteorite is an actual card. This is an actual 5-mana spell. So it's so funny that now, this is how far we've come. Now a new 5-mana spell makes a Meteorite, but also gives you, like, as many fucking Meteorites as you want.
It's 5-mana. That's the big issue that's going to happen with this one, is just that 5-mana first, that first cost is going to be a little bit much, and it competes with Atali right now. Is this better than an Atali? I don't know. Atali kind of does so much more when it enters Ottawa, yeah, but like, this is cheaper than Atali.
Atali's like so explosive, but like you said, this is cheaper, and Atali doesn't have removal attached to it.
Yeah, Roxanne is great. I think I'd probably give Roxanne like maybe a 3-4. What did I give Rakdos?
A 3-5.
Yeah, I think it's like a maybe 3.52.
3.52? Okay, yeah, 3.52. So a little bit better than Rakdos.
No, worse than Rakdos.
No, 3.52 is better than 3.5.
Okay, so then 3.25 is what I give this then.
All right, our final card is Lost Jite. This is one colorless mana for a legendary artifact equipment. When equipped creature deals combat damage, put a charge counter on it, and you can remove a charge counter to do one of the following. You can either untap a land, have target creature can't block this turn, or put a +1/+1 counter on the equipped creature, and its equip cost is 1.
It's kind of weird that we just got that Pip-Boy equipment, and this is, like, almost the same thing.
It's kind of better, in my opinion, because you can actually stack it.
In some ways, it's better. In some ways, it's worse.
But that's why I wanted to talk about it, because if we were going to talk about Pip-Boy, we had to talk about this card.
Yeah, that one untaps 2 lands, and its other ability that's not the block ability is a little bit better. It lets you loot instead.
But this is half the mana, though.
This is half the mana. Well, that one's 1, but 1 mana to play, 2 mana to equip, or is it 2 and 2?
I thought it was still 2 and 2. What's the name of the card, Pip-Boy? It is 1 to play and 2 to equip. Okay.
Yeah, so it's the same mana cost. You can still find it off of an Urza Saga, but the 2 to equip versus the 1 to equip is pretty significant, honestly. It untaps the land right away, but I agree with you that its stacking ability is what kind of makes this good. If you don't want to use the ability, you don't have to. You can wait. You can stockpile up those untapping a land type of things. And I don't know. This is no Umezawa Jite.
No,
that's
definitely
a card that
not.
Already doesn't see play.
Yeah.
So.
No, but if we were talking about Pip-Boy, we had to talk about this one.
The fact that this can be found off of Urza Saga, I think, is its main redeeming quality. That's a little easier to roll.
What I actually, the other thing is that you can untap lands at instant speed too, whereas like Pip-Boy makes you do it as you deal combat damage.
And
so
you know what's fun is it says an untapped target land, not necessarily your own. So if another player says, hey, I got a spell pierce, let me cast it. If you untap my land, you can go, all right, yeah, you cast your interaction on their interaction with my Jit counter, I'll untap your land. Like, that's not going to happen much, but be aware because that could come up.
Yeah, so this is a 1, but
I'd say 1, yeah. I'd maybe give it a 1.1 because I'm hopeful, but you're right.
Because Arden could play it, but
right, yeah, Arden maybe. Overall, I don't think it'll see much play, but it's interesting. We have a lot of cards that are kind of hard to evaluate that they look really similar to other powerful cards, and it's hard to quite evaluate if they're actually going to be good enough or not, but a lot of closeies in this set. Much more closeies than we've ever seen, so I'm very prepared to be wrong about a lot of these cards.
Yeah, me too. This is definitely a very cool set. Big set for Commander in general. This is like a fan service set, if I've ever seen one.
Yeah, definitely. Tons of cool stuff. Way better than I thought. It could have been really bad. I think they could have really fucked this up, and so far, I don't think they did it.
Do you want to talk about how they could have fucked it up?
Nope, let's not. Thanks so much for watching. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Kajo, Alex, Sean in the Ice, Mark Cirillo, SoCal Acura, Stormageddon, Luke Cook, Demon of Rosgrees, Uncle Butts, Nick Foles, Goat09, Kwaja A. Hamid, Lauren Connell, and Baby Jeebus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Thank you, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Make sure you use our affiliate link down below and code playtowin5 for 5% off your order.
You can follow us on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram for more content.
Thank you so much for watching.
See you next time.
Jacob Balder, Luca Bressel, Big Mike, Nicholas Balder, Reactive, Tyler Watson, Brian Barrington, Zachary Colson, Tyler HX, Tyler the Tree X, Malcraft, Driving Bruner, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poti, Hobo Ghost, Mitchell Shepard, Justin Mansillo, Pedro, Jacob Depp, Michael Blue, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
Fuck it, we'll do it live! We're doing it live, fuck it!
I'm pissing.
Guys, if I'm peeing, wake me up.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow and Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.